This episode of Intelligent Medicine is brought to you by the next big thing in anti-inflammatory supplements, a brand new all-natural daily preventative against a host of possible inflammatory issues. Black for Health liquid extract from Future Farm Botanicals. Black for Health combines four plant-based foods, black garlic, black radish root, black cumin seed, and black peppercorn, containing high levels of body-ready healing botanicals. Black for Health supports your liver, skin, cholesterol, blood pressure, and weight management, circulation, and immunity. It's a tasty supplement with liposome complex for optimal absorption. For more information and to order, call 888-841-7216, 888-841-7216, or go to myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. That's myfuture, P-H-A-R-M, myfuturefarm.com/Hoffman. Welcome to today's Intelligent Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Dr. Ronald Hoffman. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla, wherein we answer your questions. Questions come to us via radio program at AOL.com. I'm here with Layla Mutin, who is our nutritionist in residence. And each week, we endeavor to answer your questions. We're not making a stimulating and lively conversation with occasional segues, stream of consciousness departures, but we'll mostly try and stay on track answering the questions that you've sent us. How are you doing, Layla?
Okay, Dr. Hoffman, how are you doing?
Very well, thank you. And I did a little leaf watching last week. I went up into the Catskill Mountains.
Oh!
And yeah, there's really beautiful country here in New York.
Yeah.
You know, you tend to think of New York as urban, but there's these vast expanses of New York where you can just drive into the country, not see any other cars.
Lovely.
Even on a busy leaf watching weekend. And
nice time of year for that.
Really, really beautiful place. Mm-hmm. Some nice trails, did some trail walking.
Mm-hmm.
Got some color therapy, which was much needed during this season change.
And a little forest bathing.
And it's this time of political campaigning,
mm.
Which, you know, the other good thing about it is that I was out of TV range and out of...
Oh, that's nice to shut all that down.
Out of device range. So that was good. So here we are. And, the week brings us to... a great deal of controversy about whether to lock down or whether to open up.
Hmm.
And this has become a political issue.
Mm-hmm.
I think that people signal their political allegiance by masking or unmasking. This is the new political statement du jour. And I actually wrote a column about this. And the column is entitled COVID-19, The Long Short Road or The Short Long Road. Which is like, you know, basically the theme is that virus gonna be a virus and it's gonna do its thing.
Mm-hmm.
And we can mitigate the effects of the virus.
Mm-hmm.
But remember that flattening the curve was really about reducing the stress on our hospital system
right,
at a time when we
overwhelm.
Thought we were going to be overwhelmed. And we were nearly overwhelmed. And we had that hospital ship parked in the harbor.
Yeah.
And we thought, you know, it's tents in Central Park and, you know, which ultimately weren't needed. But we pushed right up against the capacity of the hospitals.
Mm-hmm.
And then it got a little better.
Mm.
And so, but then they sort of changed strategies, which is maybe we can keep this from being bad.
Yes.
And we continued and prolonged lockdown, some states more than others.
Yes.
And this week we had the Great Barrington Declaration. Did you see it?
Yeah.
Or last week actually came out.
Very impressive.
Yeah. It was a group of, I think, pretty legit scientists, not wackadoodle eccentrics.
Right.
People at Stanford and people, you know, at prominent institutions, Johns Hopkins and so on,
mm-hmm.
Mayo Clinic, who... perhaps a little bit of a dissenting view, because they basically said that we should adopt a model of voluntary compliance with precautions.
Yeah.
Because we don't want to create edicts about, business closings and school closings and things like that.
We don't want people to die from poverty and illness.
And depression and suicide. And
yes.
Suicides are up, no question.
Right. So,
and also we're going to see a lag phase on the deaths associated with COVID-19. Deaths not attributable directly to COVID-19, but indirectly. In other words, people who didn't get good cancer screening, people who didn't get good heart screening, people who felt chest pain or felt numbness in their extremities and didn't go to the emergency room because they were fearful and may have died. Or, people with diabetes whose diabetes isn't being treated well. We have one patient in common, and I said, you really need to see a diabetologist because you may need to start insulin. And he says the next appointment, this was a couple of months ago, he said the next appointment's in November. I said, well, you might end up in the emergency room, with a very high blood sugar. That's not the way to manage this.
Right.
Although better with diet, it clearly he needed more. Mm-hmm. So, we're seeing a lot of dislocation in society. I worry about our kids because our kids are fatter than ever. Our kids are more device addicted than ever. Our kids are more depressed than ever. Mm-hmm. And what's this long period of lockdown going to do to an entire generation of kids?
I was at the dentist yesterday and the hygienist was telling me about her first grader son at home.
Dentists are going bust. Dentists are because they just don't have... The patients are afraid to come in.
Right. Yeah, I guess. Well, I was there. There were several other people there.
Good for
you. Took our temperatures. Everybody was good and abiding by all the rules. Anyway, she has a one-year-old who's learning, not a one-year-old, a first grader. Who's learning virtually at home. But she was telling me how he misses playtime. Oh. And to see his friends and to do this on the computer is just so strange. And what will be the impact of that psychologically
impact,
on children having to stare at a laptop all day?
Yeah,
pretty much.
Yeah,
and not play is how children socialize and learn.
Mm-hmm.
It's part of their. It's part of how they structure their psyches and personalities and all of that. Without getting too far into psychology, but it's true. They play, and they're not getting that anymore. And plus not being in the classroom, being stimulated that way.
Now, we're not advocating a letter rip, approach where we just, tell everybody to just mingle and, have COVID-19 parties so that everybody catches it and then we get herd immunity. I think that is also potentially disastrous. But, the Great Barrington Declaration calls for a more, shall we say, moderate approach to this. This came out of nowhere just a couple of days ago. World Health Organization came out with a statement saying that lockdowns aren't the answer.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
I mean, I would think that the World Health Organization would be aligned with a more aggressive approach to suppressing the virus.
What is worse than worldwide poverty from a lockdown?
Yep.
More people are going to die. This is going to reverberate into the decades after, or at least the first couple of decades.
Yeah.
Oh, my goodness.
Right. And with a disproportionate effect on the poor and increasing inequality because, I know a lot of people in my circle, they're doing fine.
Yeah.
Why? They have jobs where they don't have to go to the office anymore.
Yes.
They just are on, they're on Zoom conferences.
Mm-hmm.
They have businesses that are resilient in the face of this, like online sales of products and things like that. They're doing okay.
Mm-hmm.
But there were already people from the upper middle class.
Right.
But what about the people who work in restaurants?
Exactly.
The cooks, the waitresses, the retail employees.
Mm-hmm.
These are people who are going to find themselves drivers.
Mm-hmm.
The Uber drivers, things like that.
Right.
People are utilizing these services less.
Mm-hmm.
People in the transportation industry, people in the entertainment industry, like. Broadway is dark.
Broadway.
Till May, and God knows for how much longer. I have tickets for Billy Joel next month. You think that's going to happen in Madison Square Garden?
Oh, man, too
like
bad.
A mass casualty event. That's not going to happen.
Right.
So anyway, Interesting times. Read my analysis of that in the newsletter article. It's already posted to social media, I think, this week. And subscribe to the newsletter. You'll get in your inbox. And if you don't choose to do so, just visit our website and check it out.
I do want to say my sister visited from Geneva, Switzerland recently.
Yes.
And there
what's,
was one
what's
reason.
What's their take on that?
Yeah. Well, the one reason she couldn't wait to go back is in the streets of Geneva, Switzerland, nobody's wearing a mask.
Why?
They're wearing a mask in the store. They're wearing a mask on the bus.
Makes
sense.
But
walking around down the, up and down the street, nobody's wearing a mask.
Right, right.
And she couldn't understand why we were all wearing a mask.
Yeah.
Unless being in a crowd on Sixth Avenue or something. A little different. But, you know, she just couldn't understand. Anyway.
Look, I think it's, there's an element of the ick factor. Once it's instilled, it's very hard to repeal that.
Mm.
There's a fear factor.
Mm.
There's also sort of a, I think there's, for some people, they're sort of like vigilantes. You know, they want like everybody to comply. And there's this sort of a herd mentality about that. We have a couple of people in our building who will simply not get on the elevator with us, you know, when we go up the elevator.
Yeah.
And they're angry when we try to get on the elevator. Because the rule is...
not more than three, for example, on the elevator in this building.
But people who live together in a household, they are considered one entity.
Yes.
For the sake, because they are basically have the same exposure.
Yeah.
So...
you can't, three of you, for instance, get on an elevator where there's another person or...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Right.
You have to break up your ride.
But it's going to be hard to unwind that. And that this may be a long-term effect.
Yeah.
And there's enough, even before this, there were enough germophobes. And we're all becoming germophobes, which is, you know, what's the effect on our psyches, on our kids, and so on.
Right.
It's a sort of a bleak situation. And I think it's bringing out both the best and the worst in human nature.
Mm.
You know, this... sort of a negativity bias that people have in the face of adversity, because this is a form of adversity. Diversity will take other forms. You know, where's the hopefulness? Where's the long-term resilience in the face of a challenge like this?
Mm-hmm.
And then they say, follow the science. Follow the science. But I laugh because as a person trained in science, I'm sophisticated about science. Science is full of controversies.
Oh, yeah.
My whole Intelligent Medicine radio program is about controversies in nutrition, in high-tech medicine. You know, things that we thought work great turn out to be absolute disasters, drugs that are recalled, surgeries that are unnecessary. So I, when people say, follow the science, just follow the science. I kind of laugh, like, really? You think you worship science like it's some kind of, you know, objective entity? Science is in flux. It's constantly being challenged and reevaluated.
So I think the great Barrington Declaration is just a wonderful thing to happen.
Even if it's to start a conversation.
Yeah, yeah, you know, because it's... I'm afraid going forward in the history books, this may be looked at as the biggest economic stupid disaster in the world's history.
Self-inflicted.
Self-inflicted.
Wounded.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So we shall see. Anyhow, on that,
on that hopeful
on
note.
That note. Hi, Dr. Hoffman and Layla. Thank you for what you do. This is an email from Joe. I wrote a few months back asking if Candibactin ARBR reducing the good bacteria in the gut might make me more susceptible to COVID.
Whoa, interesting theory.
Yeah.
And because we do know, by the way, that the microbiome diversity may have something to do with susceptibility to COVID-19.
Absolutely.
It has to do with the immune system.
Mm-hmm.
So it... But this is with the supposition that taking Candibactin is like taking lots of antibiotics.
Yeah.
With antibiotics, that might be a more plausible scenario.
Yeah.
But anyway, go ahead.
Right. I was diagnosed with hydrogen SIBO, small intestinal bacterial overgrowth.
Mm-hmm.
I'm 44. I eat a very clean diet. I'm in good shape. I work out regularly. I've spent thousands of dollars on different treatments and things, including Candibactin FODMAP diets, nutritionists, supplements. Well, anyway, I feel like it's a motility issue.
Mm-hmm.
But now I feel like I have to sit for 40 minutes to an hour in order to feel a complete evacuation. That's too long.
This is what's called tenesmus, which is a medical term for a feeling of incomplete evacuation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, and at night, I feel all built up inside as if I need to go, but I cannot. Also, after I eat, it's almost immediate that I feel the bloating. How can I address the motility issue?
I mean, we're talking about this, and this is a little icky to talk about, but there's so many Americans who experience these types of things.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. He's tried motility activator. It didn't help much.
There are various products that purport to do that.
What if it is a motility issue?
Well, you know, the answer is consult.
Consult, exactly.
You know, because I don't know exactly what's going on.
Right.
You know, and he suffers from a form of constipation, you know, IBS-C. C stands for constipation predominant.
Mm-hmm. But he's had SIBO. He's had hydrogen SIBO and...
Actually, more methane predominant SIBO is associated with constipation.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. I'd have to look at the results. I'd have to analyze those results. I'd have to look at his diet. I'd have to look at his activity levels. There may be a brain-gut axis thing going on there.
Right. One thing that Joe does say, I used to evacuate twice a day, and now it's only once in the morning. Well, maybe that's the new normal.
Exactly. People worry about these things inordinately.
Yeah.
And
why didn't I go to the bathroom today? Well, did you need to go to the bathroom today? No. Well, do you feel constipated, bloated, backed up, uncomfortable, anything? No. I just didn't go today.
Yeah.
The idea will bother somebody,
right? I think people who have IBD may have their enteric plexus is the nerves that are in their intestine. Maybe more sensitive to a sense of fullness.
Hmm.
And some people are wired that way.
Mm-hmm.
And that's mm-hmm. a causative, you know, one of the causative things associated with this. I mean, this may be, to call it psychogenic would be to suggest that it's all in your head. But actually, since there are nerves, a lot of nerves in the gastrointestinal tract.
Yeah, that's the original brain.
Right, you know, right. There's
ancient brain.
Two-way traffic from the brain to the gastrointestinal nerves, mm-hmm. where there's just so much nerve innervation there. Maybe something that works on the nerves, you know, things like CBD, even medical marijuana. They had a very interesting article in Science News recently about why marijuana and cannabinoids, especially, mm-hmm. and this would include CBD, cannabidiol, have an impact on GI symptoms. And one is that they're a little bit sedating. They can, they reduce pain, they reduce adverse sensations and create a sense of relaxation.
Mm-hmm.
But they also change the flora, the cannabinoids. They actually alter the intestinal balance. So, I'm thinking after all this finagling to try and help the microbiome and get rid of bad bacteria, blah, 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 out, foul spot kind of thing.
Yeah.
That's from Macbeth. You know, it's this almost obsessive effort to get rid of some pathogen that's afflicting the GI tract, that maybe just something to relax the GI tract would be appropriate in this case. That would be my inclination from this sketchy description here.
Yeah.
And, but again, without...
What used to be called spastic colon, maybe.
Yes. There's, right.
Right.
Old term. We realized that term was reductive because it put too much reliance on this inherent nerve hyperexcitation in the GI tract. But, so then we started looking at the microbiome and imbalances in candida and pathogenic bacteria and food intolerances and histamine and all these other things
that
play a role. So it's complicated.
Mm-hmm. It's complicated.
And this is the kind of case that we sometimes see is these people who've tried a lot of things and, they're looking for some guidance beyond
Exactly. You know,
some basics.
Okay, Joe, that's a consult. All right. Let's see here. We've got one from Marianne. Dr. Hoffman, thank you for taking the time to review my inquiry. My husband was diagnosed with stage 4 metastatic prostate cancer 3 years ago, underwent surgery, had tomotherapy pelvic radiation.
Mm-hmm.
Now, 3 years later, following...
Stage 4, by the way, is it's spread. It's spread outside the capsule of the prostate, and it's metastatic.
Yeah.
So it can go to other organs.
Now, 3 years later, following androgen deprivation therapy, he has a detectable PSA.
A blocker, yeah.
Yeah. And it's unknown at this time where the prostate cancer is.
Right. It's just this. You get a blood test that says you have an elevated PSA. Where's it coming from? Mm-hmm. There ain't no prostate, right?
Yeah.
It got zapped. It must be coming from somewhere else, but it's not big enough to light up on a PET scan.
Right.
A CT PET,
yeah.
Right? But it suggests that there's smoldering embers of cancer in his body.
Yeah. His providers have said there are treatments available for slowing the growth, as it's likely in his bones or pelvic organs.
Mm-hmm.
My question is, what is your professional opinion and review of the antineoplaston therapy offered by Dr. Stanislaw Brzezinski at his clinic in Houston?
I've interviewed Dr. Brzezinski earlier in his career, and I followed with interest his controversy. His controversy was about, you know, they were basically trying to ban his innovative cancer treatment. And, you know, he's been sort of an embattled cancer maverick.
Mm-hmm.
I cannot vouch for the efficacy of his treatment in this situation. I think it's kind of, you pays you money and you takes your chances. The therapy's expensive. It's not well documented in clinical trials, and nobody is reproducing his work. So you might say that if he keeps records, he can, you know, demonstrate that his treatments work, but it needs to be replicated. I'm sympathetic to his efforts to do breakthrough innovative cancer care, but I also think that it's not that well validated.
Mm-hmm.
And so I really can't speak to that.
Mm-hmm.
What you might do is you might consult with Ralph Moss. Ralph Moss runs a cancer treatment decision website. He's not a physician, but he sort of garners information about innovative cancer treatments, both conventional and alternative. And he might have some insights onto whether it's plausible to go see Brzezinski. Or whether some of the newer, you know, there's immunotherapies that are now being introduced for many types of advanced cancer, whether they are promising in this case. I think immunotherapy is going to be the name of the game in treating advanced metastatic cancer in years to come. From a vitamin supplement standpoint, I'm not sure the vitamin supplements play a role here, but I think in early prostate cancer they do.
Sure. Yeah.
You know, EGCG and various, you know,
mushrooms,
DIM and blah, blah, blah.
EHCC,
yeah. But, you know, I can't tell you that taking a raft of supplements is going to cure this.
Yeah.
So, Ralph Moss, you know.
Ralph Moss, Marianne, for your husband. And best of luck to you both.
Yeah, and I interviewed him recently, and he did a recent book on... the limitations of conventional therapy.
Did he do the Moss report?
Yeah, the Moss reports.
I used to subscribe to that.
Yeah, the Moss reports.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. Let's see.
Give us a preview of what we're going to talk about in part two, because our time is waning for part one.
What's the difference between glycine, dimethylglycine, and trimethylglycine?
Okay, that's it. Thank you. That's an easier question.
Yeah.
Easier than metastatic cancer or, you know, something, an irritable bowel that it doesn't respond to many treatments. When we return, more on these questions. And we welcome questions sent to radioprogram@AOL.com. Some interesting questions this week coming up in part two. I'm Dr. Ronald Hoffman, today with Layla Mutin. It's our weekly Q&A with Layla. And this is the Intelligent Medicine Podcast.